You're listening to The Science of Storytelling, presented by Pressboard, a show about marketing, media, and the people making it happen. Your host is Jared Grimm.
On today's Science of Storytelling episode, I'm chatting with Shannon Toomey. Shannon is the Vice President, Marketing and Branded Content Strategy, and co-head of Post Studios at the New York Post. We're going to dig into what makes New York Post such a great partner for entertainment brands, what it's like growing up at MTV Networks, and why her mom still believes she's on a first-name basis with Gene Simmons. If you like this episode, please leave us a comment and let me know what you think. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss a single episode. Now, please enjoy the show. Shannon, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jared. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on the show today. You are the Vice President, Marketing and Branded Content Strategy, and the co-head of Post Studios at the New York Post. So that is an exceptionally long title. So it's a good thing business cards aren't really a thing anymore. Can you unpack that role a little bit for me?
Absolutely. So Post Studios is the in-house creative strategy team for advertising for the New York Post, Page Six, and Decider. And we help ad sales put their best foot forward by creating everything for them from go-to-market strategy and materials to all custom programs. That includes branded content, custom video, custom design, experiential. Basically, whatever our clients want to do, we help them dream up creative ways to do it.
Yeah, it's quite a role. And I can't imagine that you went directly from school into a role like that, that has that kind of breadth of experience. So let's go back a little bit. We'll touch on New York Post again in a little while, but I wanna hear about the career path that led you to this role.
Sure. So essentially, I grew up at MTV Networks. I spent over 11 years there. I started as an assistant in music and media licensing, which was an incredibly interesting start to a media career. Understanding rights and clearances is definitely something that served me well in every single role I've had since. It comes up a lot more than you might think, especially in advertising and custom campaigns, needing to think about who owns what and how to protect the individual creators' rights. Not speaking about us as a creative studio, but more about, UGC or photography or clips, really any intellectual property, somebody owns it and you want to make sure they get proper credit.
Right. And when you're doing this at MTV, I imagine a lot of it is around artists and music and who owns the rights to those. I know very little about the music licensing space. How does that work?
Sure. So that department has a very, very broad role. What I worked on was third-party licensing, which was actually the content that MTV Networks owned that other people wanted to use. Mm. So, for example, when Oprah was doing her anniversary special and she wanted a clip of, this is so old, Jessica Simpson and Nick Lachey from Newlyweds, they needed to come to us to properly license the clip, to get approvals. Someone had to look for it, actually, work with the library to find it, detail the terms and conditions that they could use it. It's pretty interesting. Then there's also the music licensing side of it, which is for everything you're hearing in the shows. Whether that's the show open, the music in there, or the music that you're hearing throughout, everything has to be properly licensed. What was really interesting about that point in my career and the media industry is that that's when so many different platforms and forms of media were rolling out, the evolution of DVD to streaming, and that's when contracts began to have all media language in them.
Right.
So that was really, really interesting to see how the business and legal affairs team at MTV was handling that and rolling it out, across the industry.
Right, because I imagine there was this transition from you were licensing it for TV, for a TV show, and it was really clear how many times that would run, how broadly it would run. Absolutely. But as you move from there, and now it's going to be on the internet, which, crosses geographical borders and doesn't have an end date on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. So you're exactly right. So initially it was a short term and a set term, and then it's also changed again, and I have not been in that space for over 10 years.
Right.
Maybe more. Wow. But so it certainly expanded and changed beyond when I was there. But you're absolutely right. It was the expansion of what's a term. Like, is it 1 year? Is it 5 years? Is it in perpetuity? Really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I even just think we're on a podcast right now.
Right, which didn't exist.
Yeah.
So that was new media.
And everyone has an opening sound onto that. So you hear a lot of people will create their own because it's a really small, you know, piece of music that needs to be created for it. But also some people might think, oh, I'll just grab like a quick Taylor Swift song and I'll put it at the beginning of this and I'll just do the beat. Maybe I won't do the audio and never think twice about it, which probably is okay if no one listens to your podcast, right?
It's only okay if you're playing it for your mom in your house.
Right, and she doesn't report you. Yeah, which I'm hoping that doesn't happen. It's super interesting. Do you find that some of that skill set that you learned at that time applies at all to your work now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not the music licensing part, because we don't necessarily, music doesn't really come up in what we're doing. I mean, for custom video, it does. So we just worry about, you know, is it coming from a music library? Is it something we can buy outright? Yeah. We're not using popular tracks for the most part. Or if we're working with clients who want to, for example, we're working on a custom video for an upcoming Broadway musical, and they will confirm that we have approval to use the music. So they will handle the clearances, they give it to us, they rep and warrant that they have permission to give it to us to use.
Yeah, interesting. And MTV must have been an interesting time to grow up in the MTV networks at that time. I remember, I mean, I'm dating myself, but I remember that was like, it was like wallpaper for me. It was just always on, right? Mm-hmm. You just would have that channel on all the time. And it moved from, you know, music videos into its own content, and a really interesting time for TV, a really interesting time for a whole generation of people. Were there any, you know, interesting anecdotes that, I mean, I imagine you ran into some different personalities and people during that time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was really fun. It was a great place to be. I worked on the music group brand. So that was MTV, VH1, CMT, and Logo. And as you can imagine, and I'm sure you're aware, each brand has a really different voice and personality. So that was really interesting. I mean, the range of products and properties and talent associated. So, you know, did a ton with the Jersey Shore cast, which was really entertaining. We did, for VH1 Classic Records, we did an entire DVD series with the band Kiss called Kissology. They were actually the Grand Marshals of the Village Parade in 2006, so I got to ride the float with them, which was incredibly entertaining.
I love that idea. I love the idea of when you're sitting there, you're on a float with Gene Simmons, and just picturing, like, how did I end up here? That has to, I don't know if it goes through your head in the moment, but every once in a while you have to stop and be like, how did this end up being a job?
Well, my mom still sends me like any news about the band Kiss, and I'm like, Mom,
right.
I'm not actually a natural fan. This was a project. But yeah, that was really fun. I mean, again, the broad range of the spectrum. We did an entire fitness DVD series with the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. Mm. And that was one of my favorite projects. I mean, I got to produce the photo shoot for that and the DVD packaging. And so that was really, really interesting. I mean, we were back and forth to Dallas several times. We got to do the workouts with the trainers and the cheerleaders in the initial like casting phase. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is serious. Their workouts are serious and really fun. Got to work on wardrobe for that. That was a really interesting one, too.
Yeah, I'm watching the show Cheer right now. There's mm-hmm. a documentary. It's intense. It's mm-hmm. an intense athletic
Absolutely.
Endeavor with very little equipment.
Absolutely. They are athletes, that's for sure.
And a high level of risk, I find. You know, you're flying three stories in the air. And then you're being caught by two humans, which are like, valuable.
It's a lot of trust.
I never really excelled at that part of it. I have a fear of heights. I can't imagine that I would want to be thrown up to those heights regularly. Well, that's really interesting. So you follow this path at MTV. How long were you at MTV?
Sure. Let's see. So almost 11 and a half years. So I went from music and media licensing to creative development and marketing. And that was all the lines of business for the music group channel. So it was DVD and streaming, audio, consumer products, publishing, radio, and on-air movies. And it was really also, again, you know, the evolution of media, it was tangible and digital products. And that was really cool to be involved in the rollout of our first ebooks, you know, our first, at the time it was download to own, now it's streaming. Really, really cool.
Yeah. And were there any, was it smooth sailing for the whole time, or were there bumps along the road?
Sure. It was mostly smooth sailing. But what's might sound crazy or maybe not surprising to people in the media industry, I was actually laid off from Viacom twice, which sounds a little crazy. The first time was after 10 years. It was that department, it was called Program Enterprises, which was the creative development and marketing role, got dissolved, which was pretty stunning to all of us. And it was just, it was really unexpected. I'd been in that with that team for, you know, 7-8 years maybe, and really felt like family. So that was really, you know, caught us all off guard. I moved over to a different department, which was digital partner marketing, which was really a tactical decision. I knew that coming from creative development and marketing and going over to data and audience development was going to be a lot less creative. But I knew that for the evolution of my own personal career, it was important. And it was important to understand our digital advertising strategy. And that role was about helping make it relatable to internal and external clients. And that was really, I would say, a career transition that allowed me to take all of my consumer and product marketing experience, tie it to digital advertising, partner marketing, which then was the transition to the New York Post. So that, the second time I got laid off was from that department, again, a reorg. You know, media industry seems to do that every single year in the big companies. And, you know, the second time around, it was kind of awesome. I traveled a ton. I got back into surfing and yoga. I was able to take time to figure out what I wanted to do next, be really selective about it. And that brought me over to Post Studios.
Interesting. So the second time, did you just feel more comfortable that you would land on your feet again? Is that why you were able to disconnect from this idea that the, you know, the sky is falling?
I think that's absolutely right. The first time was stunning. And I think because I had been with that group for so long, it was just stunning. And the second time around, it was sort of like, well, this is business. And now I have some time.
Yeah, it's something that I see happening a lot to people in really great positions now as well, where several times throughout their career, there was a reorganization, especially in media. It's such a constantly changing space, which means there are reorgs all the time. Like, what's exciting about media and exciting about advertising is also its con, which is there's not as much stability. What if you get hired? You're on the TikTok team now, right? So there's this whole team. It's super exciting. You're going to be figuring out how TikTok works for your company. And then, you know, maybe something happens to TikTok and there's something else. And they're like, we're not looking for TikTok experts anymore. And that entire department gets laid off.
Right? Pretty common, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
It's something that isn't talked about. It'd be interesting to delve in one time into how it is that that you're able to be comfortable with it and then make the best of it, because you've obviously come a long ways from there. You were able to go and travel the world, a mini retirement in a way.
Sabbatical. I thought of it as being on sabbatical.
Right, yeah.
It was great.
Tim Ferriss in his 4-Hour Workweek talks about this idea of mini retirements throughout your career, which is really interesting. And it's this idea that every few years you just stop, you kind of retire, and then you restart a career afterwards. It's an interesting idea. Okay, so you come back from your sabbatical, and then let's talk about when you started at New York Post. How did that job come about?
So a friend of mine from MTV sent me the job posting and said, "This sounds like you would love it," which is just super thoughtful. And I read the description, and it was a blend of creative and business strategy. And I mean, that's something I've always found really appealing, that that entire stint in creative development and marketing, like, that's exactly what that was. And I loved that. And so I always look for that opportunity in roles. So I came in and I think I had 5 rounds of interviews, and I laughed in every single one of them. Like, the people were just really warm, really funny. And I walked out of there thinking, like, cool, this could be really cool.
Nice. And Were you familiar with New York Post prior to that as a consumer, just as a person?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I grew up on Long Island, so, you know, really familiar with all of the big New York media brands.
And what was it that you liked about New York Post as a company, as far as the properties that it has and the content it publishes?
The New York Post has a really distinct voice. Certainly delivers the news in a kind of witty, irreverent tone. I mean, our headlines make headlines. And it's really interesting. I mean, the scope of coverage from the New York Post, we have the best sports in town by far. Our sports writers are incredible. From the Page Six perspective, covering entertainment and celebrity, really, really interesting, really distinctive. I mean, basically created celebrity gossip industry. You know, Page Six is over, you know, 40 plus years strong. And then Decider is really, really interesting. Decider is a newer site. It's about 6 years old now. It's coming up on 10 million uniques, which we are incredibly excited about. We may have just passed that. And it's a focus on entertainment content for streaming. So it's really, actually before the Times watching section, Decider was around talking about, you know, what to watch, how to spend your time, like how to cut through the clutter of all of the endless hours of streaming content out there.
That's interesting because we're not having fewer streaming services. I mean, there's going to be several other ones that are launching this year. I noticed this myself just as a person with several subscriptions to several streaming services is I sometimes just need to know what to watch because there's just so much. The easy thing about linear TV was that the options were limited. Mm-hmm. And so if you were into a sitcom, there was only two that were on, right? And if you were into a cooking show, there was only two that were on. And now I can watch any of 10,000 cooking shows at any given time, which becomes daunting. So I need someone to help curate that for me.
Check out Decider.
Yeah.
There's actually a part of the site called What to Watch. I mean, that's the entire purpose. Like, you know, all of the streaming opportunities are overwhelming. And that's the point, is that these are really interesting reviews of shows and suggestions and how to watch, where to watch, what to watch.
Yeah, and with this huge amount of options out there, I also am less willing to waste my time on something that I don't like. Like, I won't spend an hour and a half watching something unless I'm pretty sure I'm going to like it.
Yeah,
which is a little different than, again, linear, when you'd watch linear and just would watch something because it was just on, and so you'd be able to fill the time. Now my expectation is that every time I'm watching something, it is super high quality, right? Super engaging. I'm going to talk about it with my friends afterwards. And this is just, you know, Tuesday at 8 p.m. I expect that.
Oh, yeah. And it better grab you in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's kind of that idea. My cousin's a screenwriter, and it's this, you know, first page read. Like, you have to be able to get someone in that first page. And it was really interesting, the idea that this is why a lot of shows and movies have such compelling beginnings to them is because of the screenwriting process, which is you're pitching it, and mm-hmm. that first, you know, 1 to 10 pages has to be able to hook somebody because no one reads past that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So you come over to New York Post, and what are the types of brands? So we're talking about the advertising side, and that means that, you know, for an audience, New York Post, Page Six, Decider are really relevant to them. You know, you have these headlines that make headlines. I love that line. Now, for advertisers, what is it that attracts advertisers to the New York Post and New York Post properties?
I think that for advertisers, it's our voice. It's our scale. We're over 82 million monthly uniques. 87% of that is outside of New York. I think that really surprises people a lot.
Definitely, because it's called New York Post. So the expectation is that it's going to be a high skew towards
New York. Exactly. I mean, for sure, we are a regional powerhouse with national appeal.
And I'm assuming that's pretty widespread across mm-hmm. the U.S. primarily?
Mm-hmm. We tend to get a lot of business from entertainment clients, retail and fashion luxury clients, and local, what we consider local, even though they're large, like hospitals and universities.
I could see that. I could see, you know, entertainment companies, fashion companies, you're already covering these industries, and why would they not want to be in front of that?
We'll be back to the episode in just a few seconds, but first, we have some exciting news for you. At Pressboard, we love stories, but we know how hard it can be to measure them. So we're here to help, whether it's a sponsored article on a news site, an Instagram post from an influencer, or a video on YouTube. Our tech measures it all. Pressboard is already trusted by Spotify, Intel, NBC Universal, Hearst, and thousands more. And here's the big news. Listeners of the podcast can try out the Pressboard platform for free. Just email info@pressboardmedia.com right now. All right, let's get back to the show.
I love a campaign that you did for Pop TV's FLAC. I found it really interesting. I'll let you get into explaining it, but what I really loved was how you took kind of like the editorial approach and the insights that you have into this industry and then applied it to a creative execution.
Well, thank you for that setup. The Pop TV campaign was really, really fun. It was a new show for them starring Anna Paquin about a publicist kind of fixer who really deals with a lot of celebrity nonsense. And right off the bat, as soon as we heard about the show, we knew that Page Six would be the perfect fit for it. So what we successfully pitched to the client was tapping into our network of friends and colleagues, reaching out to real publicists, and getting them to anonymously share some of the craziest things they've had to do for their clients.
Do you have some examples?
You guys should check it out. You can find it on Page Six. But I mean, as you would imagine, it runs the range of, you know, procuring drugs and covering up, you know, inconsistencies in stories. And
well, I think the super like interesting thing about this is who else would have been able to reach out to a bunch of publicists, get this anonymous feedback? Like, you need a direct line. There's not many publications that would have been able to take that creative concept and then reach out to people, have an insight into that industry. This is what I love about branded content is the difference between a brand working with a publisher sometimes and working with just a creative agency. I mean, creative agencies are amazing and they can cover a lot of different things, but sometimes a publisher has this unique insight and depth of knowledge that doesn't exist in other places. I thought that was an exceptional way, and definitely people should check it out. I looked through some of them. I love that it was anonymous too, because you know that people are sharing real stuff.
Oh, it had to be anonymous.
Yeah, there's no way that they'd be able to say.
Certainly.
And then you find yourself trying to figure out who it was immediately.
I think one thing I just want to point out is that our creative studio is separate from editorial. Mm-hmm. So while that's a perfect fit for Page Six, that's our creative team reaching out to our publicist friends and colleagues. Editorial, you know, as in most publishers, or if not all publishers, there's a pretty strong line between editorial and advertising.
Yeah, definitely.
And then another thing that was really fun about that program is that it was premium branded content, which is edge-to-edge, fully designed, interactive, fun, not just living in a typical article well. But beyond that, we did custom cover apps for them, which is something that, you know, is a really special, unique opportunity to the Post. And we hired models dressed as celebrities and faux paparazzi and, you know, had a stunt around the city of the models handing out these cover apps, talking to people about the show, being swarmed by paparazzi. And the, you know, New Yorkers are jaded. They don't often stop to check things out. And there was a lot of audience passerby interaction and, you know, questions and interest.
Yeah, I think that's what's powerful is you're taking the essence of the New York Post and Page Six and Decider, and then you're applying it to a brand strategy. So I agree with you. The idea of church and state is really strong because the credibility that your editorial team is building up is what the brand is looking to access. And, you know, it's a really fine line between using that credibility and bringing it to a brand, but making sure that there is a separation between there. When I first started in branded content, maybe coming from outside the industry, because I came from the advertising side, I really thought, well, why don't we just blend this all together? Why doesn't the editorial team build the branded content? You know, what's the reason to not? And then as you get into it, you understand that there is a lot of value. There's actually a lot of value in that separation between those different strategies to do a marketing initiative than it is to do an editorial initiative. Even if you look at something as simple as the structure of a of, you know, the inverted pyramid, which is like a way that a lot of news articles are written, where the biggest news is given up front and you don't really care if someone stays till the end because you're trying to get as much information to the person as fast as possible. And a lot of time in branded content, you might be doing the opposite. You might, you know, want someone to come in and learn about something before you introduce the product. So you want them to, you know, complete the video or get to the end of the article. So are there any other campaigns that, you know, you're proud of or you feel are special and unique to New York Post and New York Post properties?
Sure. I mean, there's such a broad range. I think that most of them I love. another interesting recent one, we did an article for, and we did a branded content article for NBC's new show, The Bone Collector, based on Jeffrey Deaver's Lincoln Rhyme novels. And that was really interesting. I don't usually write our branded content, but I wrote that one, and it was really kind of a labor of love to geek out over forensic technology and how police are using it to solve crimes. So that was a really interesting one, and I laugh about it because I'm sure my college roommates feel like the countless hours of forensic files I made them watch in college finally came in handy.
You were doing research the whole time.
Yes.
Looking back, that's what you were doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, congratulations. That was perfect.
But that's an example, again, of leaning into the brand. And New York Post covers crime and covers true crime extensively. So that was really an excellent fit. And I actually used some of our archival articles to bolster and share examples of the technology. So that was an interesting one. Another one I loved that was different for us, and this one was actually a little bit of a blend of editorial and advertising. Last year, we partnered with Amazon on a panel for their Prime Experience in LA. Our fashion editors from the New York Post and Page Six Style moderated a panel with the wardrobe designers from three of their top shows, The Romanoffs, Man in the High Castle, and A Very English Scandal. And that was incredibly interesting. So that was an editorial angle that also had a custom activation at the event. We did a custom photo booth where users could take photos that printed on a cover of the New York Post. We had a whole prop set, design, wardrobe, made it really, really fun. And it was just a really interesting blend. It also had a media component as well. So that was an interesting blend of editorial and brand awareness for us, for the Post and Page Six, especially in the LA market, as well as a media program with a client.
Yeah, and events. I used to work in events. My wife works in events. Those aren't easy. There is a lot of things that can go wrong. You're dealing with people.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people.
A lot of people. You're dealing with weather and timing. And how do you find events when it comes to branded content compared to more structured, planned, published content?
We try to include experiential when it makes sense for the brand and their priorities and objectives. So, and it's not necessarily always branded content. So again, the studio does a lot of custom design, a lot of custom video. And on the experiential side, it won't necessarily be tied to branded content. So of course the Pop TV one, that was an experiential activation. But we just did one for Fox 911 Lone Star. Their successful series has now a spinoff taking place in Austin, Texas. So as part of a larger media program that, you know, had digital and print and social, we suggested a chili food truck outside of Bryant Park. So like incredibly iconic New York City location, delicious chili, videos, video screens playing the trailer, full branding on the truck. And that was really fun. That was a really fun way to round out the program.
Yeah. And let's talk about how branded content and events, all of these different revenue sources. Media today is, you know, most of the stories that we hear about media and publishing are a bit doom and gloom. It tends to be, you know, that advertising is dropping, print revenues are dropping, and they do to be replaced by something. How do you feel the media space is adapting or needs to adapt in this, you know, quite different current business model?
Absolutely. There's a lot going on in the media industry. Things are constantly evolving. Print is declining. Fortunately for the Post, we have an incredibly strong digital reach already that we continue to grow and monetize. We're keeping an eye on privacy regulations and the browser product changes, thinking about how to best position ourselves for the future in that sense. And we're also really diversifying the business, which is incredibly important and something I'm really excited about. We have several different things going on. We have a new entertainment division that leverages our IP and has shows in production with Showtime, Investigation Discovery, and TLC. Really excited about that. Obviously, as we talk about the voice, you know, the voice of the Post and our brands is so strong. Our intellectual property is really of interest to a lot of partners. That's exciting. We just launched an affiliate e-commerce team. You know, have to.
Yeah.
It's really important natural stream of revenue.
There's a big opportunity in affiliate. I've seen it in a couple different publishing organizations because you're already talking about products. Mm-hmm. People are coming to you for recommendations and to curate. And the product companies on the other side of that or services are looking to reward, you know, that interaction that you have in some way. So, and the reader benefits. It's one of these things where everybody is benefiting from it at the same time, which is very uncommon, I find, in like the advertising space where, you know, the reader is benefiting, the publisher is benefiting, and the advertiser is benefiting all at the same time. I think it's a really interesting space as media organizations continue to diversify.
I agree. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Another thing we're getting into is the sports betting space. As legalization rolls out across the country, and we have the best sports in town, it's really a natural extension. So we're excited about that, and more to come fairly soon on that front.
There's a lot of things. So I'm Canadian. We had, you know, legalization of not sports betting, mm-hmm. but of cannabis that came up. And those are really interesting times because entire industries are created at one time. Sometimes those industries existed, but not in a legal format. And I've seen the change in that industry. Standardization comes into play, new audiences that previously weren't interested, all of a sudden it becomes very mainstream. It becomes different. People are, you know, in the cannabis space, it's maybe moves from recreational to health benefits. People need help sleeping, and instead of taking sleeping pills, mm-hmm. they might use cannabis instead. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the sports betting space as well, because again, it's something that's existed, maybe not in legal formats all the time, but entire industries are going to be built around this.
Yeah, we're already seeing it. It's very exciting. Another thing I'm really excited about for our brands is that we've launched 5 podcasts in the last 5 or 6 months. So we have We Here, which is our first Page Six podcast, and we have 4 different sports ones with more to come.
Podcasts are really interesting. Obviously, I'm a fan of podcasts. Otherwise, I wouldn't have this podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts myself. What I found really interesting about podcasts, it does remind me a little bit. Remember the early days of blogging where everyone would have, you could have the most niche blog in the world. And as long as you found your audience for shoelaces, you could have a blog about shoelaces and you could just geek out and only talk about that all day. And I think that's what's happening in podcasts. I've already listened to a couple incredibly niche podcasts. I mean, our podcast is fairly niche as well. What have you found was the impetus or the reason for New York Post to be doing podcasts?
I think it was a natural extension of our editorial expertise. We know that people love Page Six. Podcasts are a new media, a new form of consuming content. And it only makes sense for us to also be in that space. Same goes for sports. I mean, our sports writers are experts. They're regularly sourced by other media outlets. And again, it's just a way to give our already engaged audience a new forum to consume our content.
Yeah, new format, right? Same expertise coming to you in a new way. And then advertisers will be attracted to that as well because you're reaching that audience in a unique way. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been super exciting, not only to learn about your career path. I mean, I love the story of MTV Networks. As much as I don't love the story of you being laid off twice, I think it's an important thing for people to understand that this does happen to people in the growth of their career. And it's just a part of that journey. And that you can, you know, come back from that, do some traveling, and then become the vice president of marketing and branded content strategy and the co-head of the Post Studios at New York Post, all at the same time. I think there's some exceptional campaigns that you're working on, really interesting stuff. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what's next for the studio at New York Post and New York Post in general, with these podcasts coming out, live events going on. Even if, you know, print might be in a decline in these other areas, there's so many growth areas that I think are exciting, and it's just part of that evolution.
And I would say that one thing that is still really exciting about print is our ability to do national cover apps. The first time we did it was about a year and a half ago for the brand Supreme. And that was the first time we ever let a brand be on the front cover of the paper on newsstands. And it became a pop culture moment. It was really exciting, really crazy, really exciting to be part of. And so that's something that we've done for a couple of other really select partners. And that's an interesting way to still leverage print and the strength of the brand.
Yeah, we are seeing a resurgence of print around this idea of holding on to this tangible item. People will, you know, keep it in their house. They'll put it up on their wall, like a cover. They might put it up on their wall. There's this resurgence of quality or moment-based print that marks a point in time. And you're right, it's very visible. You can go nationwide with it. And it does now differentiate it from, you know, the extreme amount of content that's available online.
Absolutely. I mean, we do a lot of premium takeovers as well, but they're one day. They're ephemeral. They're fleeting. Something like a national cover app is, as you said, it's tangible. It's the Supreme one became a collectible.
It's amazing. So before I let you go, we do a book club and we do a movie club at Pressboard. So we're always looking for good recommendations. So do you have a favorite book or a favorite movie?
Of course. I would have to say that my favorite book, it's one that I've reread several times over the years, is The Alienist by Caleb Carr. It's fantastic. It's historical fiction. It's set in New York, end of the 18th century, when Teddy Roosevelt is the police commissioner. And it's about the evolution of psychological profiling in the hunt for a serial killer. It's really interesting. And it's set in New York. So for a New Yorker or for someone who loves New York, it's really, really cool when they talk about the neighborhoods and even down to the buildings and the addresses which exist. Really good, really special.
Amazing. Love that recommendation. Loved having you on the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Thank you so much for tuning into The Science of Storytelling. Don't forget to leave us a comment. We love hearing from you. We have a ton more episodes coming up this season with some absolutely amazing guests. So make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss a single one. See you next time.